O'Reilly Digital Media explores the future of audio, video, and photography. Each show brings you insights from leading experts. Learn more by visiting digitalmedia.oreilly.com.
I'm here with legendary digital photographer, Stephen Johnson. We have to have some fun here, but it's true. Stephen has an O'Reilly book, Stephen Johnson on Digital Photography, which I think is one of the finest overviews of photography, from covering everything from ethics to its beginnings to technique to good photographs by other photographers, including yourself. It's really a terrific piece of work, Stephen. How are you doing today?
Doing good. Thanks for the good words.
Here. Oh, it's and I mean every word of it. But I want to touch on the book for a minute, but then I want to talk a little bit about learning photography beyond books. And one of the things I know you spend a lot of time with is workshops and working one-on-one with photographers. So let's just touch on the book for a second and then get into the workshop thing. Tell me, now that the book's been out for a little bit, you've had a chance to look at it, how do you feel about it, and how are you using it in terms of teaching and things like that?
Well, I'm real proud of the book. You know, sometimes when you put a lot of work into something, you can't stand to see it for a while. But that didn't turn out to be the case in this particular one. I really did want to be able to take a lot of what I'd been teaching for the last 10 or 15 years and put it into a book form. And that's what the On Digital Photography book really is. It's a distillation of what I've been talking about, trying to communicate to people, talking both about the evolution of the technology, partially because I want us to understand we're not so brand new and hot stuff. We're, in fact, a long legacy of invention to the mid-19th century, and to understand that electronic imaging is really what we're making. Digital is just an artifice on top of that. And it connects us to a past and a sense of wonder about electromagnetic energy instead of photochemical reactions and all sorts of things that I think are really wonderful about the energy and inspiration that photography can be.
Well, one of the things that I notice when I look at the book is that it has perspective. And perspective, I think, is important. A lot of times I think people that are new to photography will think, well, this is something that is, you know, it's just came around the bend recently. And, of course, you look at your book, and a lot of this has been in the works for a long time. Photographers have been doing amazing things with digital tools for a long time. But in terms of perspective, I think you do as well a job as anyone I've ever seen in sort of giving us the context of that.
Well, you know, photography's been around since 1839 officially, and it's gone through all sorts of technological changes as that time has passed. But it's always been about the highest technology of its time.
Yes.
And so it's no wonder at all that we started making electronic cameras when we needed to get up in space, or we needed to or we thought we needed to spy on somebody,
exactly,
or any number of things along those lines. And so much of what we're using is a direct evolution out of the publishing, spy, military, and space exploration industry, and those things made digital photography as we know it today possible. But the legacy of how we're doing it is not unrelated to old silver processes.
Yeah.
The way we're making our color photographs with a Beyer pattern camera is almost exactly like the Lumiere brothers made the autochrome color plates at the turn of the century.
Yeah.
With colored potato starch grains as filters.
Exactly.
And so that kind of wondrous connection between then and now is something that I want people to feel and understand. And I also want people to understand that this idea of photography is a long-held tradition in human experience now at 170 years or so, and that we do, in fact, have a lot of expectations when we look at something that we think is a photograph.
Yeah.
I still firmly believe we look at something that we think of as a photograph and we have an intrinsic belief that it was before a lens.
Yes.
And in this digital age of a knee-jerk sort of manipulation and compositing and then not really being straight with people about what they're seeing, I think it's really important to remind people that there's something sacred about the experience of taking a photograph from the real world and being able to share that experience. And if you're going to make it into something else, by all means do, but just let your viewer know.
Yeah.
You know, call it photo art or photo sculpture or photo digital or whatever. But that magic of seeing something It is a momentary capture of something almost beyond belief that makes you grab your camera to begin with.
Yeah.
That's why we love photography, and that's why I wrote this book.
Well, you know, that actually provides me with a nice segue to talk about teaching photography. Mm-hmm. And I know you spend a lot of time teaching. I'm curious. I haven't been lucky enough to go to one of your workshops. Tell me a little bit about your workshop series that you have going, and then a little bit about the attitude that you bring into that. I mean, you know, there's a lot of different ways to teach photography. What's important to you?
Well, for me, the most important thing about teaching photography is empowering people to pursue something that they really have a heartfelt attachment to.
Mm-hmm.
So to take whatever passions or inspirations they find in the world and turn them into a tangible form that people can experience and share those experiences. And so in that sense, there's always been something very special about teaching. Because if you can provide people or help provide people with a creative outlet that gives vent to those instincts that I think we all have,
right.
I think that that's, almost a sacred kind of experience.
Yes.
So I've been teaching since the late 70s, and it's always been part of what I want to do as an artist, is share what I've learned and try and give other people an opportunity to skip a lot of mistakes and be able to really get to the core of what photography is and how they can use it. So I started teaching in colleges and extension and all sorts of different ways, trade shows over the years. But I've also had my own photography workshop program since 1978, and we morphed it entirely to digital in 1992. And then
right.
we reemerged the whole field workshop aspect right. of that in 1997 and 98 when the digital SLRs were first starting to come along.
So when students come into class, you know, when they come into a workshop, what are some of the things that you see over and over again in terms of, is there a question that you always get, you know, is there a misconception that you have to, you know, clarify? What are some of the things that you see a lot from photography students these days?
Well, of course, these days everybody's using Photoshop. And we're talking about digital images, or at the very least, scanned film images. And I think the thing that comes into play more than anything else is a sense of being lost in all the choices.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an instinct that if you pay a lot of money for a piece of software and hardware, that there's all this stuff that you're supposed to do to a photograph. In fact, I think the internet plays a positive and negative role here, because we get a lot of people out there pontificating about the things you're supposed to do.
Right.
And some of these poor students come in here with their brains so confused about all the special steps they're supposed to go through in order to simply finish a photograph. And I think if you get them initially to just start asking themselves why and what their intent really is, and does a simpler method and the tools already within Photoshop, for example, provide the tools that they need, and sort of get them to rethink the idea that it's not a matter of what we're supposed to do to a photograph, but what the photograph needs simply to be finished from its original capture of the scene into a realized image that feels complete. And more often than not much is really needed to be done unless we've made some real mistakes up front.
Right.
And we all make those mistakes.
Of course we do.
But repairing mistakes or repairing historical photographs or things like that is a different matter than just simply finishing a photograph that was well made to begin with.
Yeah.
And so craft is something I really emphasize.
Now, I know when I look at a lot of your photographs, I can tell that you've climbed mountains, you've waited for hours, you've waited for... How much are you into pre-visualizing the photograph, especially when you're shooting landscape, as opposed to just trying to be in the right spot at the right time and see what happens? Where do you fall on that? Or is it just different from assignment to assignment?
Well, generally speaking, mine are self-assignments, so I go where I want, when I want, at least when I can afford to do the trip I have in mind. And actually, I never wait for light.
Mm-hmm.
That would be very unusual for me, because I'm firmly convinced that we are a little too deeply entrenched in the golden light of eternal sunset that seems to follow photographers around all the time, and that we miss a lot of the ordinary circumstances that are actually quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talk about here we've got this constant nuclear fusion going on 93 million miles away from us, pouring out all this
yes.
life energy and light, And then we call it ordinary.
Yes.
Or we call it dull.
Exactly.
Or we call it lifeless.
Right.
All because it isn't golden.
Yeah.
And I'm very intolerant of that for my own work, and I'm very anxious to get people to see that there is no such thing as bad light. There's uninspired photographers.
That's true.
There's also being in a hurry and not noticing the intricacies and beauty of what's there. But I don't wait for light. Now, if I'm long enough in a place because I'm working that I see the light start to change, sure, like anyone else, I'll notice that and try and react to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I would never calculate to go to a particular place because I expect a particular light. That doesn't mean that I don't get up before sunrise and stay till after sunset, because I'm a sucker for the golden light,
sure,
too.
Right.
But most of the strongest photographs I've made in my life have had nothing to do with golden light, but they've had to do with a certain sensitivity to what I'm looking at that causes a real heartfelt emotional reaction that at least leads me toward the possibility of a photograph.
Yeah.
I don't always rise to that occasion,
right,
but that's what it leads me toward.
Well, the different types of light inspire us to approach the subject in different ways. So you're right. It's something, you know, you hope that you're doing the light justice, but you never really, at least I never really know until I really get to sit back and look at the images later on. But that leads me to another question. I remember one of the, in the early days when I first saw you and you had a view camera with the scanning back on it and a power book out there. And so you were getting feedback on an image that a lot of us weren't if we were out there with a 4x5. And, you know, we might have Polaroid, maybe not. But how much does that feedback influence you during the shoot? Or are you really trying to, you know, use your eyes? And then, you know, how does that work? How do you balance that feedback between your eyes and what you see on the screen?
All those things are deep influences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as much as is possible, I want to use the tools available to me to understand what the kind of photograph that I'm making and to try and make it as fully realized as I can imagine and see the manifestation of it on the screen. And so carrying the Better Light camera and a 4x5 and a power book taught me an enormous amount about my own sensitivities and when they were working well and when they weren't. Also about the transformation from a three-dimensional reality to the two-dimensional realization of a photograph fixed rather than just an image on the ground glass, which always looks beautiful even when it's not.
Yeah, I know, it's true.
And so I think I've learned a great deal from closing that loop.
Yeah.
You asked about pre-visualization earlier. And yeah, we all got accustomed to trying to imagine what the negative might look like.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're in an age where we really can see the result of our work on site. And yes, it's much easier with a view camera and a scanning back and a power book. But you can also use that power book with a SLR and just hook them together and just take a look.
Yeah.
Or you can use one of the little Hoodman loops or something along those lines to get at least a better look at the LCD screen. People make fun of folks for looking at the back of their camera after they make their photograph. And I think that's ridiculous. Of course you should look at the back of the You should look at it for the histogram. You should true as much as you can to understand how far your compositional instincts carried you, if you brought the kind of sensitivity to the scene that you were hoping for. You want to use whatever feedback mechanisms you can to try and understand the photograph you made and see if it rises to your own expectations or maybe even lead you to discover something that you didn't even notice until you started trying to photograph something else.
Yeah.
And that kind of interplay takes the idea of pre-visualization and just sort of turns it on its head and says, yeah, we're out here visualizing,
exactly,
no longer pre-visualizing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that changes a fundamental paradigm of photography. We've been used to the idea of making the photograph and experiencing the photograph as separate and discrete pieces of time, often weeks away from each other.
Yeah.
And now, if we choose to, we can take that and move those two events together in time in such a way that we really do experience the photograph on site. What better time to make it the strongest photograph it could be, to see if it rose to our expectations, and to correct for the technical errors we so commonly make, despite
trying to pay attention to all the details.
Well, I think that's what made learning photography hard for me in the past, was that length of time between when I actually made the exposure and then when I actually got the feedback on what I had done, and then remembering all the details of what happened. Now that having that feedback more quickly, I think, makes it easier to learn from your mistakes on the spot. So I think digital photography is a blessing that way.
Yeah, it really is. Well, you know, it always was hard to determine what the proper color balance should be when you're printing a color negative.
Yeah.
Well, we've got that same problem with a RAW file now.
Right.
Unless we have some sort of spectrally neutral gray source that we photograph, which is one of the reasons we sell our gray caps on our website.
Exactly.
We have a hard time knowing how to balance the color. And the further we get separated in time from that initial experience, the harder it is to recollect.
Yeah.
And sometimes the more bizarre the scenery, the harder it is to even believe your own photograph after the fact.
Yeah.
So there's power, but there's also new things we need to keep track of, like getting some sort of neutral gray source, a Macbeth chart or something in there in a set of photographs, so you have some sense of how to balance your RAW files. And I'm assuming that most of the people in this particular podcast are going to be shooting RAW rather than JPEG.
I would
and
guess
so. If they're not, let me encourage them to,
well,
to try and hold on to the full potential of the camera.
Yeah. So speaking of how do people find out more about the workshops?
Well, one of the reasons I went ahead and started doing so many field workshops again is because of the empowerment that all the SLRs were giving people.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave me that ability to then get back out into the field and work with people so that it wasn't just technically discussing after the fact what they did, but helping them with composition, exposure, histograms, and really working through that, trying to distill that large angle of view down to a very narrow angle of attention. And I always talk about that in the composition lectures. So when we thought about really expanding the in-studio workshops, I decided even though I didn't want to manage a lab, I was going to have to build a custom lab of my own.
Yeah.
Because there was no lab I ever worked in that was up to my own expectations.
Right.
And so we went ahead and built a lab that everybody has their own printer, their own spectrophotometer, their own colorimeter.
Wow.
ISO monitors, Epson printers. Everybody has their own printer. And it's a complete workflow solution, even not only the full suite of Adobe products, but things like ImagePrint is on all the machines, PhotoKip Sharpener is on all the machines. So it really does become a place where you can come to learn the full breadth of what the digital photographic workflow can be and get the help with it from somebody that's been around the track a few times on this stuff. And so if people want to find out more, by all means come to sjphoto.com, which is the website. And we have a whole set of studio and landscape workshops coming up in this next year.
Excellent. Excellent. So that's SJ Workshops.
No, SJ Photo.
SJphoto.com. Very good. Steven, thanks so much for coming by. Fascinating talk as always.
Thank you, Derek.
This show was produced and is copyrighted by O'Reilly Media. For more podcasts, tutorials, reviews, weblogs, tips, and tricks, visit O'Reilly Digital Media at digitalmedia.oreilly.com.